Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braden. Go by SEC Mike, go on the Twitters. And no, that is not Cousin Shane. He's losing weight. He's not lost that much weight. That's our good friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, I'm doing well. Good to chat with you here. A little different day, but always good to be talking some SEC ball. And we got the 4th of July coming up, so it's going to be an interesting week, I'd say.
Yeah, appreciate you being flexible. Cousin Shane, a little family business. I don't want to get into what exactly he's got going on, but he's good. He'll be back tomorrow, so we're just switching dates with Steven. So Steven always comes up with fantastic ideas on what to cover, and this is something unique. I've not seen anyone else ever do this. Steven came with this idea years ago, and it gets better every year. Ranking the SEC schedules based on the quarterbacks they're going to be facing this fall. Can you break down a little? We'll get in all into your list here. We got some other things as well, Steven, but what made you want to go down this road? And because I just find it kind of fascinating. It's a different way to look at these things.
Yeah, I mean, we talk so much about, you know, schedules and also quarterbacks, and also good quarterbacks can overcome a hard schedule. Good quarterbacks on sort of like average teams can make a schedule harder. And so when you kind of marry those two ideas, schedules and quarterbacks, you kind of get this idea of looking at what every team plays and also kind of weighing that to defensive strengths, maybe like what games are at home, just trying to get the idea of, yeah, we know their schedule is difficult on paper, but what about all the quarterbacks they're playing and kind of how that matches up? Or does it match the strength of schedule rankings, or does it match, is a little different when you look at the quarterbacks? So some teams get some big breaks and some don't, but I just think quarterbacks being the most important position, any way you can kind of dissect those rankings in a different way is always pretty informative for the season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So before we get to that, though, we always like to, you know, just because Steven's here, not Shane, doesn't mean we're going to switch it up completely. Sunday, weekly, bold predictions. So, Steven, I think you're going to like this one. I teed this one up just for you. Bold prediction. I don't even know if this is a bold prediction. I know it will be for you. I know it will be for seemingly everybody in the college football media that I'm disgusted with. But my bold prediction, Steven, John Mateer scores more touchdowns than Arch Manning. How about it? I mean, come on. Is that even a bold prediction? I think the comments section will agree with me, but I know to you that is probably the boldest comment one could make this football season.
Can't believe I'm gonna take my headset off and just walk off the set. What the heck are we doing, Mike? Just giving you a hard time. It's an interesting prediction, because I think, like, first of all, trying to assess Oklahoma's offense this year is like one of the biggest preseason questions for me, because you have so many things that went wrong, and here you are, you're kind of starting from scratch, but you still have Deion Burks and you've improved your receiver. So, you know, in the portal era, we've got all this data, but we don't have an extended track record. So trying to figure out what exactly it means. But also when I look at these, like, we'll get into schedules. I mean, Oklahoma's schedule of defenses that they're going to play with the strength of schedule this year is pretty tough. So I think just based upon the transition to the SEC, I know Mateer was awesome at Washington State. Still think it's a pretty big jump to do that in the SEC. So I would have to disagree with your bold prediction. I think Arch will score more touchdowns than Mateer, but
surprise.
It's a bold prediction, Mike. So I love the fact that that is bold.
All right. So what will be your bold prediction? And it better not be Arch Manning scored more than John Mateer. Otherwise, we're turning this off.
Let me give a tip of the cap to one of my colleagues at Athlon Sports, Kyle Wood, who works with me on the college football section. He reminded me of this stat last week that Florida has not had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2002. Wow. And like Ricky Pearsall came close. And, you know, of course, they've had some quarterback and pretty mediocre offenses. How about that streak ends this year? How about Eugene Wilson gets to 1,000 yards for Florida? And so he becomes the first Gator to hit 1,000 receiving yards since 2002.
I like that, Steven. I had no idea that was a streak. I know Georgia's got a similar streak. So, but yeah, that's fascinating. And I would assume a big reason for that belief is this man, DJ Lagway. So, I mean, everybody knows, I think DJ Lagway, he may be the best quarterback in the conference. So I love that bold prediction.
A lot of this does hinge on the health of DJ Lagway too. And I think that's still a big question for me. It makes me a little bit worried to, you know, before we get some better intel on where Lagway is and kind of his health. And it also kind of shapes SEC title. It shapes the playoff race. It shapes potentially Heisman Trophy, all SEC teams. But I think if Lagway is healthy, he starts every game, he's playing at the level we think he can get to, I think that benefits big time Eugene Wilson. I think that's why I think he could become that 1,000-yard receiver.
Mm-hmm. All right, one other thing, slow time of the year. Obviously, it's very slow, Steven, when we're talking video game. But I wanted to throw this your way. Anybody that missed it, the College Football 26 is what this year's version is going to be called. They just released this week top 10 teams. We're going to go over the offenses and defenses as well. So let's run this down real quick, Stephen, for those just listening back. I got it on the screen here, but some surprise, Alabama, the highest rated team in the new college football video game. Texas, number two, no surprise there. Ohio State, three, probably not a surprise there. Penn State, four. Notre Dame, five. Good night. What did Shane Gillis make his list? Georgia, six. Clemson, seven. A&M, eight. What? Oregon, nine. LSU, number 10. Thoughts on that list, Stephen? Any that you disagree with strongly? Maybe another team or two that you would have had in the top 10 that the college video game does not have?
Mike, I think for the most part, I think they did a pretty good job with that top 10 that matches up, I think, fairly close to kind of what I'm thinking for the season. You know, to kind of take a step back, I think there are probably like eight teams that could win the national title this year, and the eight that I would have are all in that top 10. I think within this top 10, Mike, I think I was a little surprised to see Alabama at one. I would have Alabama in that top eight, but number one seems to be pretty high. It also seems like the people at EA either the rating system or they have a lot of belief in Ty Simpson stepping in and being really good this year. But I think that also kind of gets at the potential for this team defense and all the weapons on offense. Like if the quarterback situation hits, that's not a crazy ranking at all. So not a ton of surprises there, but I would have Alabama a little bit lower. I would probably have Georgia and Clemson a little bit higher. Maybe A&M certainly behind LSU in the top 10.
Yeah, certainly I'm feeling better about picking the Tide to win the SEC. Okay, top 10 offenses, according to the video game. Number one, Texas. Number two, Penn State. Number three, Ohio State. Number four, Arizona State. Get that. Clemson, number five. LSU, six. Bama, seven. Notre Dame, eight. Florida, nine. Miami, 10. Thoughts on that, Stephen? Any of those that you strongly disagree with?
Mike, I think that list looks pretty solid on paper. You know, Miami is kind of a big question, given that Carson Beck is coming back from the injury. Florida also knowing the uncertainty to what extent, 100%, whether he's not DJ Lagway, a little surprise maybe to see them at nine, but also the potential if Lagway is healthy. Texas, Alabama, LSU, I think that those would all be among my top offenses in the SEC. So no real disagreement. It feels like they did a pretty good job. Maybe I would have Arizona State behind LSU and Alabama a little bit lower. Four is a little bit too high for me for Arizona State.
What about a wild card here, Steven? If Lenore Sellers keeps taking a step forward and maybe, a receiver emerges there. I know they got a lot of talent there. I can understand maybe not having South Carolina top 10 today, but I'd be a little bit surprised if they're not top 10 by the end of the year, given how good I think Lenore Sellers is.
Yeah, I think that I could definitely see that. I was looking at their extended list and they have South Carolina down at 25, which seems pretty low to me. I think I would have this team a lot closer to that 15-16 range, especially when you have somebody like Sellers, who is just such a difference maker. And also to see South Carolina at 25 and see Texas A&M at 12 and Georgia at 13 in sort of the overall top 25 offenses is a pretty wide gap. So I would like to see South Carolina higher there. But to your point, I think if Sellers hits and we see a Nick Harbor or we see one of the other guys step up at receiver, this could definitely be a top 25 offense this year.
And then lastly, top 10 defenses. Man, I got some issues with this. Alabama, number one overall defense. Texas, two. Those I'm kind of fine with. Penn State, three. Get the hell out of here. Georgia, four. Ohio State, five. Michigan, six. Oregon, seven. LSU, eight. They haven't had a top 10 defense since Les Miles was a coach here. Texas Tech. It's going to take a lot more oil, buddy, to have Texas Tech be an elite defense, in my opinion. Clemson, 10. Where's Tennessee? Where's Oklahoma? This list is trash.
Mike, I'll make a bold prediction here. Oklahoma should be in the top 10 of defenses. What the heck are we doing? This was one of the best defenses in the SEC last year, and they're not even in the top 10. Look, I'm going to say this. I know this is not a Big 12 podcast, Mike, but I am buying Texas Tech's defense being better. But I will just, you know, submit to you that they gave up about 34 points a game in Big 12 play last year. They are going to be better. They are not a top 10 defense. Oklahoma should absolutely be in the top 10 over Texas Tech when it comes to defenses. And shoot, throw in, you know, whether it's A&M, Tennessee, there is a host of SEC teams that should be in there. Mike, I don't know if you realize this, but Oklahoma is 17th in the top 10, top 25 defenses on this game. Is there like an Oklahoma State grad doing these rankings or something?
Nothing but clickbait. You know, no. Who's not clickbait though? Cousin JR.
Legend. Cousin JR has done it again.
He's back. JR, the legend. He's back. He just gifted a membership, Steven. And this time, he's gifted. Who is he blessed? Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. Welcome, Todd Gwynn. I believe he's a big gamecock there. Welcome to the family, Todd, courtesy of the legend, JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
We appreciate you, buddy. Man, always loyal. The best cousin out there, Cousin JR. All right, so, Steven, let's get into it. Ranking schedule difficulties by quarterbacks faced in the SEC. This is a unique thing that you've come up with, one of my favorites. So how do you want to do it? We should probably go in reverse order, shouldn't we?
I think that works good, Mike. I think we start at the bottom and work our way up. Would it be helpful maybe to kind of go over criteria a little bit too, just to kind of give the cousins kind of how we approach this kind of the ranking process?
Well, they're going to be mad either way. But I think explaining it will help.
Yeah, I thought maybe this would like stop people from being mad on the internet. So, yeah, the way I do this is, so I did my I used some of my early SEC rankings, and I put into like, if you're playing Oklahoma, I have Mateer ranked as the X quarterback in the conference, and then so on and so on the SEC schedule. And I added all those up. It gave kind of a good range. A lot of teams were close and they tied. And I think what it goes down to is, so when you look at quarterbacks in the SEC, I think the top four are pretty clear. You can rank them however you desire. Nussmeier, Lagway, Archer, Sellers, whoever you want in those top four. I think the middle is pretty congested, and there's a kind of a clear bottom three or four in the SEC. So I think once you've ranked every quarterback and assigned that numerical value to the team, you get the sort of the tiers start to separate as far as the numericals on the overall. And you can kind of tweak from there. So it's not an exact science, but I think it kind of gives you an idea of like, hey, they might miss three of the top four quarterbacks in the league and they get three of the four of the bottom. That's a pretty big deal when you're talking about playing defense.
No, yeah, that makes sense. So I'm glad you explained it. Because again, Cousin Shane, when he's listening back, he will need this explanation for sure. Vault Tiger says, let me get a beer. I'm confused. So let's get into it, Stephen. Who number 16 schedule based on quarterbacks that will be faced next fall?
And this should be the easiest one. So We're going Auburn at 16. You know, I think this also kind of gets at the theme of the season for Auburn, is that it could be a kind of a breakout season. And just looking at what they play in SEC games this year, there's no Arch, there's no Nussmeier, there's no Sellers, and there's no DJ Lagway. They get a pretty favorable break. They are missing the top four quarterbacks in the conference. They do have some breakout candidates they could face, whether it's Stockton, Prabula, Mateer. They also play Diego Pavia, who owns the state of Alabama. So there's some good and bad here, but I think if you're missing the top four quarterbacks in the conference, that is a very massive check in your favor.
Yeah, that's interesting. See, again, this is not something that I think will be on a lot of people's radars, but a lot of unknowns. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, by the end of the season, Steven, Gunnar Stockton, we could view him as one of the better quarterbacks in the conference. Ty Simpson, or maybe Keelan Russell, by the Iron Bowl. Bo Prabula, you know, I mean, there is John Mateer. Who knows? He could win the Heisman. All of a sudden, this list looks very, very different. But a lot of what ifs on here. So yeah, this makes complete sense. And why Auburn? You'd have him this low on the list. I think that's a wise choice by you.
Yeah, I think one of the difficult parts about doing this exercise is there's going to be quarterbacks that kind of come off, not necessarily off the radar to be stars, but also when you're kind of evaluating these schedules and you look at some of these quarterbacks kind of in the middle tier, whether it's a Stockton, whether it's a Ty Simpson or Marcel Reed, you have to assume that somebody out there is going to take that big step forward, which makes the schedule a little bit harder. So kind of in the eye of the beholder, but I kind of go back to kind of what we think about Auburn is they're kind of in that wild card tier. And if you're not playing your top four quarterbacks and your defense was good last year, and I think it'll be solid again this year, that really helps Auburn's case to kind of take that step forward when you're not playing the superstars of this league. And I should say too, Mike, I think this is a hard year for quarterbacks in the SEC because it is very deep at this position. So there's not a ton of difference, I guess, between like 5 and 12, essentially.
Well, maybe now we know why Hugh Freeze is on the golf course 20 times a month, because the schedule's not that difficult. All right, who's number 15 here on your list, Steven?
I thought he was just trying to keep up with Cousin Shane and his...
Yeah, hey, maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, I think Cousin Shane's out there about 28 times a month.
I mean, people are clamoring for the Hugh Freeze Cousin Shane golf cart ride to play in 9 holes, film it, you know.
Maybe they can make that happen at media days.
Yeah. I think we need to make that happen. You guys had some good coach interviews, but that could be the best one. But Mike, at 15, we got the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, they do not, they play Arch Manning, but also I think one of the things that I took this into account, they dominated Texas last year on defense, especially in that meeting in Austin. Things were a little different in the SEC championship game, but they play Arch, they play DJ Lagway. You know, they don't have to play Garrett Nussmeier. They don't have to play Lenora Sellers. So they get some breaks. You know, when you look at the other rankings, they're going to play Zach Calzada. They're going to play Joey Aguilar. They're going to play, some of Blake Shapen. They're going to play some quarterbacks that are going to be at the bottom of most people's quarterback rankings. So I think there's, with every team, there's good and bad here. You get Arch Manning at home. You get DJ Lagway on a neutral site, and you get some of the league's bottom quarterbacks. Also, kind of taken into account, we think Georgia's defense will be good again this year, despite maybe they weren't as dominant last year as they were in previous years.
Yeah, maybe you need to inform old Kirby Smart, Stephen, because last year that's all he did was complain about the schedule and even got upset to Greg Sankey's face. Yeah. Now all of a sudden he's got a favorable schedule here. So very interesting. Yeah, to see Georgia this low. Man, Georgia, I don't know what to make of them. And one week I'm high on them, one week I'm kind of low on them. But I don't know. Now all of a sudden you've got me high on them again with this ranking.
Could also this ranking could look a little different too, depending on like what Ty Simpson does, what is Jackson Arnold, Austin Simmons. Like they have sort of that middle tier breakout quarterbacks. Also, getting Tennessee in the third game of the season is tough because Tennessee gets Syracuse in the first game. They can probably cruise their way to being undefeated by the time they play Georgia. So you don't really know what Tennessee, I think, is going to be at that point of the season in week three. So there is some unknown here for Georgia, but this is kind of banking on talent plus missing two of those top four gets Georgia to have the second easiest stretch of quarterbacks in the conference.
Hey, shout out one of our favorites, Stephen, Michael Riley. He's a big Gator fan. Wife got her nursing license. Congrats. And finally, I'm finally out of the National Guard. I'm back, baby. Time for old Napier to take 9-3 type of team to 6-6. Oh, we appreciate you, Michael. I mean, I think the first time he stood out to me, I don't think it was last season. I think it was the year prior. It was after a big game that Billy Napier blew. And then he called into the voicemail line, and it was just one F-bomb after another. So, we appreciate you're holding out here, Michael. Maybe this is the year for old Billy. You know what?
Yeah, good to see Michael back. I mean, this, Mike, if you want to be a Florida fan, it's probably one of the seasons to have a lot more optimism than in recent memory, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I do too. So, congrats, Michael, and hope that 6-6 season doesn't pan out for you there.
All right, so who's next on the list?
Mike, Vanderbilt is 14th in the rankings. So they, you know, they do play a tough kind of top three. They get Sellers, they get Nussmeier, and they get Arch. But they also play five double-digit situations. And what I mean by double-digit situations are they're quarterbacks that most people are going to have ranked 10 to 16. And that's Missouri, that's Kentucky, that's Tennessee. They don't play Mateer, they don't play Austin Simmons, and they don't play Gunnar Stockton. So they miss the breakouts. They get the top, but they also get a lot of quarterbacks most people will have at the bottom of the conference. So still tricky because it's the SEC, but also once you get past the top four, it gets a little bit more manageable for Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, this is so interesting, Stephen, because again, this is, this has been debated for years and years and years, but going to a 9-game schedule would change this significantly. And it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot about who you're missing this year. And I think it was that way a little bit last year as well. But man, this is just so fascinating to think about, but at least Vanderbilt's catching a break in that regard. Cause a lot of people have this as a significantly more challenging schedule than last year following their breakout 7-win season. But I don't know. I'm pretty confident Vanderbilt can get back there this year with all the experience they're bringing back. They're certainly not going to sneak up on anybody this year, but I think their sneaking days was long. as soon as they beat Alabama, they weren't sneaking up on anybody, and they still found a way to win a couple games here. So, I think Vanderbilt is just a new era of Vanderbilt for me.
I agree with that. First of all, just Pavia, the belief that he has that they're going to win every week. It's a totally different vibe around Vanderbilt more than ever. Also, I think fair to play into this ranking too. Vanderbilt's defense, I think, should be good. I mean, I know there's some questions, a few questions in the secondary. How do they restock a little bit up front? But I think we saw the growth on defense last year, and their schedule kind of sets up as like it's very stacked at the top and at the very back of the rankings, and they miss all the quarterbacks in the middle. So you could maybe move Vanderbilt up a spot or two, just given the top heavy quarterbacks they play. But also, if you're catching all those ones at the bottom and you're talking about swing games, trying to get to a bowl game, I would much rather from Vanderbilt play those quarterbacks at the bottom of the rankings to try to get to those six win mark.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's after Vanderbilt?
Tennessee. This is a pretty favorable schedule for a Tennessee team that comes into the year with a new quarterback and all the other new pieces. Playing DJ Lagway, Gunnar Stockton, Diego Pavia, there are definitely some challenges here, but they don't play Lenore Sellers. They don't play Garrett Nussmeier, and they don't play Arch Manning. And they play Mateer and Lagway and Pavia later in the season. So I think that's kind of big for a Tennessee team with some, we'll see what Jermon McCoy's health is at that point of the year, some of the other new faces that they have. So I think for Tennessee, getting those quarterbacks being backloaded, but also missing some of the top, I think it's a pretty favorable path for the Volunteers.
Yeah, so favorable. I don't know if you saw this, Stephen, but Cousin Shane's calling for Tennessee to win 11 games this season, and I'm not talking basketball or baseball. We're talking football here. Now, of course, that's best case scenario. But yeah, hey, he loves the schedule, just like you're saying here. Where, I mean, man, the more we dive into this stuff, Tennessee's probably only going to be underdog three times at most, and that's if things go right at Florida. If not, maybe 10 times. And that's assuming things go right at Alabama even. So, man, this, again, I think Alabama's my pick to win the SEC, and I'm very high on Florida. So I think those are going to be losses for Tennessee. But there is a world where both those programs go sideways. This could be the Indiana schedule of the SEC for last year. You know what?
Oh, Mike, fire up. Where's all those Big Ten fans that were yelling at you guys about the post-game podcast after Ohio State, Tennessee? You can see how if Tennessee makes the playoff at 11-1 with a pretty weak schedule, I would love to see that reaction. But actually, the first team that went into my mind was, you know, we talk about team strength. The schedule is a big part of, like, you have to have a favorable schedule or the breaks go your way if you're not one of the top teams in the country. And so the schedule breaks up well for Tennessee. I'd probably disagree with Cousin Shane a little bit. I'd probably have them a little bit closer to 9-3, but still, given what Tennessee loses, that's not the worst schedule to be facing this year.
Yeah, he's been drinking too much on that damn golf course. All right, who's after Tennessee?
Got Florida at 12 here. So kind of an interesting kind of ranking here. If you rank Florida just based upon strength of schedule, it would definitely be closer to the top of the SEC. But also when you look at how they finished last year, that gave me a little bit of confidence to kind of not rank them so high. So taking into account better defense this year, they don't have to play Sellers. They also don't have to play DJ Lagway because he's their quarterback. So they're missing a couple of the top ones and no John Mateer. So you have to play Arch, but he's in Gainesville. You get Nussmeier early in the season, maybe when LSU's still breaking in some new faces. I think the key for Florida's defense and facing quarterbacks would be, like, what does Marcel Reed, what does Gunnar Stockton, Austin Simmons, Joey Aguilar, what do those quarterbacks become? Because that kind of makes or breaks, because you're in the range where you could move the schedule up a couple notches in quarterback difficulty. But if those don't work out, they're in this range at the bottom of the conference.
Yeah, excellent point there as well. You know, again, man, this is another one where I'm just so concerned. Maybe I'm just reading too many Michael Raleigh comments here, but I'm concerned for Florida fans. And honestly, I'm concerned for Oklahoma fans a little bit. We haven't even got to them. Just given the expectations are rising, the hype is rising, as it should. I mean, these are two of the best programs in the country. You expect excellence. We're talking playoffs, perhaps, for Florida and Oklahoma. What happens if we're closer to 7-5? Man, that would be hugely disappointing, even though the schedule, you know, that may be the best. I don't want to say the best you could do, but 7-5 with that schedule could be a good season.
Yeah, it could. And of course, the question with Lagway's health is looming over all this and makes him a hard team to evaluate. When you're just looking at the quarterbacks they face, Mike, I mean, they do face, I think, four teams that are going to be ranked 10th or worse in quarterbacks in the conference. I think, you know, this all scale is also weighted a little bit because, like, the Joey Aguilars, Gunnar Stocktons of the world are probably going to be fine at quarterback, but they also play Kentucky and they also play Mississippi State. I mean, two teams that are, although I like Blake Shapen, there's going to be some question marks about how that offense operates with all the new pieces. So, you know, for Florida, you have some good, you have some bad in there, and some of the lower rated quarterbacks give them a little bit of a bump to the bottom here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's after Florida, Steven?
Let's go with Arkansas. I think the first thing that jumps out to me about the Arkansas difficulty in schedule is what happens in November. Garrett Nussmeier, Arch Manning, back to back. That's good in the sense they have 2 months of the season to figure things out before they play two of the best quarterbacks in the conference, but still getting potentially second, first team, third team SEC quarterbacks in back-to-back weeks is tough. They also play A couple double-digit situations here. Like, what is Tennessee? You got Jackson Arnold. You've got Mississippi State and Missouri. So they have some breaks on teams that do enter the year with question marks. So I don't love the end of the season back-to-back, but at the same time, they're playing a lot of teams in here that still have question marks at quarterback and just wondering how good they're going to be this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I know we're focusing on conference here, but can you fill me in at all? I know Notre Dame, obviously their quarterback is out of eligibility, but what about Memphis? I'm kind of curious about them real quick. What's their status of their quarterback?
Could be pretty good. They have Brendan Lewis, who's a transfer from Nevada, who ended up being pretty solid last season, and they have a true freshman also vying to start. So they have two capable quarterbacks. The key thing with Memphis is they are breaking in a lot of new faces around the quarterback too. So that point of the season, there will be a lot of transition. Worth noting, Arkansas State's quarterback, Jalen Rayner, is really good. One of the better ones in the Sun Belt. So Arkansas schedule's hard from just non-conference with Notre Dame, Arkansas State, and a potentially good Memphis offense this year.
Oh, geez. I was looking for a silver lining, and you kind of did the opposite there. But no, I appreciate the honesty. But yeah, all right, let's focusing back to SEC. But I don't know. Again, Austin Simmons, I'm not there with the hype. Again, he's probably going to be excellent. But will he be excellent week three? I'd much rather face him week three than week 10, you know? I don't know. And I know this is not the way we're doing this, Stephen, but I think Talen Green, if we could get him to take his game to the next level, year two under Bobby Petrino, I think you can make the argument that he may be better than just about every quarterback they faced. So again, I'm just from a quarterback versus quarterback status. I think if I'm Arkansas, I'm confident going into the season that we potentially have a better quarterback than nearly, if not everybody we face.
That, Mike, that's a good point, because I'm looking at Arkansas' schedule. If you think Talen Green is the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the SEC, which is not crazy, then he ranks about ahead of everybody on their schedule, but the LSU and Texas combo in November. Mm-hmm. And I think that's big when you're thinking about like swing games, like trying to get Arkansas from that 5.5 win total to 6, 7, 8 wins potentially. And I think everything for this team exceeding expectations comes back to Talen Green having that monster kind of statistical breakout season, which is not crazy to think about. Year two under Petrino, if the new faces at receiver hit, he's got that kind of upside. I think that's what interests me, is how much can Arkansas tap into that this season.
All right, so who's next on the list?
Got Texas at 10 here. So the key thing with Texas' schedule is that it looks very front-loaded to me. You get Lagway, you get Mateer. Also, you got to play Ohio State in non-conference play in the season opener. But then after that, I mean, pretty favorable. Kentucky, Mississippi State, they do get Pavia, Gunnar Stockton, Talen Green, and Marcel Reed. The hard part about this ranking is, like, what do you think of Gunnar Stockton, Talen Green, and Marcel Reed, and even John Mateer? They've got a lot of quarterbacks in the middle they're going to have to face, but no Sellers, no Nussmeier. So, and of course, you don't have to play Arch. He's the world's greatest quarterback. So you're catching a little bit of a break there.
No. It's always like, you know, they always complain about for years, it was like, well, Georgia, they don't have to play themselves. So, yeah, of course, their schedule's not looking as difficult. But, I mean, now it's Texas, right? You can't play yourself. I mean, iron sharpens iron. Maybe that's why Texas is going to have such a dominant defense, because they're going to be facing Arch every day in practice, and there's literally nobody going to be better than him this year. So, yeah, interesting point, but perhaps a valid point by the people that are drinking the Arch Kool-Aid, such as yourself.
Is there any team so far that you think we're too low or too high on, out of curiosity?
All of them. Yeah, you're wrong about all of them, especially Arch Manning.
Yeah, I figured that I figured the Arch Manning prediction this year would be a little surprising, but it is nice to see some other people have jumped on the bandwagon and they've got him first, second team, all SEC. So
they have followed your lead. That is for sure.
Right. The bandwagon's starting to fill up, Mike. There's a seat available.
I'll say this. If he plays 2 years of college or starts, you know, 2 years, which is the assumption based on everything I've heard, I think he'll be the best quarterback in the SEC in 2 years. But I'm not ready to just crown him like some people.
That's fair. Every year is different, my friend. We are projecting ahead.
All right. So who's next on the list?
Got South Carolina. Probably should wait a little bit more. The standout secondary that South Carolina has. Obviously, they don't have to play Lenore Sellers. They don't have to play Archer Lagway. So they get a little bit of a break there. I think what stands out to me about this ranking is, number one, the quarterbacks in the middle that they're going to face. They get Nussmeier as the top four, but they play Pavia, they play Mateer, they get Simmons, they get Marcel Reed. For a team that needs to win a lot of those swing games to go to the playoff, you're going to be playing a lot of quarterbacks that have interesting upside this year. We're not sure what they are. I didn't take this into account too much, but I do think it's notable they play Cade Klubnik in Clemson, one of the better offenses in the country, in the season finale in what should be another fantastic Clemson South Carolina game. So a few breaks on who they miss, but also a pretty solid middle and a tough non-conference game with Clemson in there.
Yeah, this was an interesting one for me because I think potentially, and quite frankly, I think it's highly likely they're same deal as Arkansas. I think they're going to have the advantage at quarterback every game they face. I'm not a believer 100% in that. I know he had a good game against Texas or whatever, Clemson quarterback. Beyond that, I'm not buying it. No DJ Lagway, no Arch. So, yeah, again, South Carolina is going to have an advantage, I think, at the quarterback position in pretty much every game. You know, there's a couple that they'll be tested. Garrett Nussmeier, perhaps, John Mateer. But that may be it for me. So, man, this is another team. I could see going one of two ways. I think, and I've made no bones about it, I think they should have been the playoff team from the SEC if they got a fourth one. But can they duplicate that hot streak? I don't know. This is one of the biggest question marks I have in the conference heading into the year. If they can, I think this is the most dangerous team no one's talking about right now.
It's the most dangerous team potentially because of what Lenore Sellers can do. You know, we think about this, when making preseason predictions or we get into the thinking about like a basketball tournament. It's like if you got to go up against that one guy, and I know it's a little different in basketball and football, but if Lenora Sellers gets hot for a couple weeks stretch in November, gets South Carolina to the playoff, you got to face him potentially in a home game at South Carolina. That's a tough scenario for anybody else. So he's got that ultimate like equalizer ability to just level the playing field. And, you know, when you look at that South Carolina schedule, yeah, they're going to play Pavia in early September, but then they get Missouri, they get Kentucky, both those teams, not quite sure what they are going to be a quarterback. Then they get Nussmeier, Mateer. Then this is kind of what makes or breaks the schedule is, what is Ty Simpson, Austin Simmons, and Marcel Reed? Like, how do those quarterbacks shape up this year? Because if Alabama and Ty Simpson doesn't work out, do one of the others, like those three games probably could swing just how hard this schedule is. But it also plays into the idea, and you and I have talked about that, South Carolina gets better in the second half of the season under Shane Beamer, and the schedule being tough late is not great, but also I give them the benefit of the doubt that by the midpoint of the season, they'll figure this out.
Yeah. Speaking of benefit of the doubt, that's one reason I like Lenore Sellers potentially over some of these other guys that we are projecting. Arch Manning, we are projecting DJ Lagway as an elite quarterback through a whole season. We have actually seen Sellers do it, take his game to an enormous level. And that was in his first year starting. So, I don't know. Year two could conceivably take his game to another level, believe it or not.
It sounds like SEC Mike is leaning Lenore Sellers first team all SEC.
That will be revealed shortly, but not on this episode. All right, so who's next on the list?
Mississippi State. So we know coming into the season they have a ton of questions on defense, Mike, and they do play Arch Manning, but they miss Lagway, Sellers, and Nussmeier. So a defense that has a lot of concerns that weighs into this. They miss some of the top quarterbacks in the conference. But again, I think one of the questions when you start evaluating these schedules is, what do you think of like Austin Simmons, Gunnar Stockton, and how high do you value Talen Green? Because those quarterbacks will make or break the schedule. For a team that has a lot of defensive concerns, missing those ones at the top is nice, but you can also substitute that out by saying they play Sam Leavitt of Arizona State, who's maybe the Big 12's best quarterback, and one of the Sun Belt's best quarterbacks in Braylon Braxton at Southern Miss. So there's a whole lot of tough matchups here for Mississippi State.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's life as Mississippi State right now. 1,001 to win it all. If you're feeling, I see JP down there feeling frisky with some wagers. Throw you 10 bucks on State to win it all. You could be a rich man here in a couple months if they actually get it done. But yeah, and I hate to say, I mean, I'm just being honest, not trying to kick them while they're down, but I think their defense is probably going to make some of these quarterbacks look even better than they potentially are this fall.
That's a good point. I mean, I think Mississippi State could easily be a few spots higher on this list. What helps them is getting Tennessee, getting Missouri, teams with some offensive question marks coming into the year, and missing those top guys. But to your point, you know, they've just brought in so many players from the portal that their defense has to be a little bit better. I just don't know by how much. It just feels like they may take a step forward, but not enough to get back to like that 6-win range this season.
Yeah, there's very few coordinators that Steven Lassen has called out on this podcast, but old Hustler's one of them. So he's just below Marcus Satterfield in the Steven Lassen call out club. But all right, who's after Mississippi State?
Missouri. So on paper, this is a pretty favorable schedule for this year. They don't play Arch. They don't play Nussmeier. They don't play Lagway. So they get the favorable misses at the top. But I think to look at where Missouri is coming into the season, I think a lot of people, including myself, think they're probably a little bit undervalued in the over-unders and the win totals and projections so far. But they do get a lot of quarterbacks in the middle of the conference that are going to make or break this season. And for a team that could be playing in a lot of swing games, that matters. So they're going to get Diego Pavia, Marcel Reed, John Mateer, and Talen Green. They get a very strong middle chunk of quarterbacks. They're not going to play the ones clearly at the bottom, like a Kentucky. You know, we'll see about Tennessee and where they play Blake Shapen at Mississippi State. But missing the guys at the top is big, but the middle of the schedule is pretty strong in terms of quarterbacks faced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Again, we just talked up Sellers. You know, this will be interesting to see just how good Alabama's quarterbacks are. That could shift it. Marcel Reed, if he takes a big step forward. John Mateer, we'll see what he is in year one. But, I just can't. I can't get enough of this schedule, and if I'm a Missouri fan, I'm pretty fired up that this is what we're facing this year. If I thought last year was a year, but maybe it's this year, because the schedule certainly lines up for a playoff run. If we can just take care of one or two big time games that we fell just short in last year. Remember, they should have beat South Carolina probably, but again, Sellers had some magic in them, and otherwise, maybe Missouri would have made the college football playoff last year.
Also, Missouri's like non-conference schedule, Jalen Daniels at Kansas, potentially one of the Big 12's better quarterbacks, and old SEC friend Walker Howard plays for Louisiana, so he'll be starting when the Raging Cajuns come to town.
Right. I've actually heard some good things down there about old Walker. So, yep, man. He was an elite recruit, LSU, Ole Miss, Louisiana. I'm trying to think of the level down of that. Yeah. But let's not mock the guy. All right, so who's after Missouri?
Alabama is sixth here. So there's some good and there's some bad here for Alabama. They play two of the top four, Nussmeier and Sellers. They miss Arch and they miss Lagway. So they split the top of the quarterbacks. We do have to weigh that they play Diego Pavia, who owns the state of Alabama. So that has to take into account that it is a hard game for Alabama. They also get John Mateer and Jackson Arnold at the end of the season. So two offenses that could be better by late in the year, later in the season, that's probably good for Alabama's defense. It's good for those offenses too. Alabama plays four of the top six quarterbacks, I think, in this conference. And I think that's pretty difficult, even if you are playing Missouri, Tennessee, and Auburn, some teams with offensive question marks coming into the year.
Yeah, and again, we're just focused on conference here, but don't forget old Castellanos calling about, Steven.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, this list gets all the more spicy for the Crimson Tide defense.
Absolutely. Yeah, that season opener was already interesting for a lot of reasons. It's even more interesting after Castellanos called out the Alabama defense. And then Wisconsin, totally new offensive coordinator. They got rid of old SEC friend Phil Longo. So a lot of unknown about what Wisconsin's going to do, but their quarterback, Billy Edwards, is probably middle pack in the Big Ten rankings. So not the most difficult quarterback rankings in non-conference play, which should help Alabama's defense kind of build up to that SEC opener against Georgia.
Yeah, but now the more I'm thinking about this, Steven, I'm just kind of surprised Alabama is not a little bit higher in terms of more challenging quarterbacks face, but again, maybe we're gonna have to see if some transfers hit, like Prabulo, Joey Aguilar, presuming Jackson Arnold. But let's just say one of those guys hits. Man, this is not easy with Nuss and Mateer, who I'm just counting him as an automatic success because I'm staying in the same system and what have you. Sellers, and I think Gunnar Stockton's probably. We're probably all going to underrate him, given, you know, just the weapons he'll have there in Athens. So, man, this is not an easy list, that's for sure.
Yeah, and also getting Tennessee, if Joey Aguilar hits,
right?
Bo Prabula and Missouri. There's a lot of potentially good offenses on this list. That you know, they miss Kentucky, they won't play Mississippi State, so they miss a couple of the teams that. Most people will have at the bottom, but there's some good when you face and some not so good, of course, when you face Sellers and Nussmeier and you get some of those breakout quarterbacks. That's kind of the hard part about this is like, which breakout quarterbacks do you like a little bit more that could move them up a spot or two?
And the legend, Diego Pavia. Well, I can't believe we went through all those, didn't even mention him, but he made his name off Alabama, but maybe he'll do it again.
I think so Vanderbilt and Alabama kind of traded some punches this offseason, right? Is it Ryan Williams going after Vanderbilt? Yeah. Man.
How the mighty have fallen. Now, right, that's a rivalry.
I was going to say, like, a couple years ago, somebody would have went back in time and told me Alabama was talking trash to Vanderbilt. I'd have been like, what the world's going on here?
All right, who's next on the list?
Oklahoma. They are the fifth toughest quarterback stretch to face this season. We know it's a hard schedule, and it definitely translates once you kind of dig into the data. They play Arch Manning, Lenora Sellers, and Garrett Nussmeier. They play three of the top four quarterbacks in the conference. And then you get into those breakouts like Austin Simmons, Ty Simpson, and Jackson Arnold, of course, coming back to Norman. So a very difficult schedule, we know, on paper, and it definitely translates to the quarterbacks, and you're getting three of the top four. The only one they don't play is DJ Lagway.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering if it would be possible to navigate this schedule to make it seem less challenging in any regard, yet here we are, we cannot do it. So the gauntlet of all gauntlets, if I'm a Sooner fan, what am I confident about? I'm confident that old Brent Venables will be able to cook up some outstanding defensive performances, regardless of who the quarterbacks he's facing. So that's my hope. And again, if all we need is a competent offense, and maybe we can hold our own in this conference. You know what?
Absolutely. And if anything, I think when you look at the timing of some of these matchups, the showdown against Michigan, Bryce Underwood likely to be his second start and, you know, his first road start going on the road to Norman. That's a pretty big check in Oklahoma's favor. You know, playing Arch and Sellers and Simmons in the middle of the season, that's probably good because you sort out some of your secondary pieces by then. And then, of course, later in the season, you have a better idea of what exactly Joey Aguilar, Ty Simpson, and Prabula bring to the table, and getting Nussmeier in the last game of the season. Like, I like the timing of the schedule for Oklahoma, and it is difficult, but I like the timing. I like Venables taking over, and also for to help out the secondary will be that outstanding defensive line for the Sooners too.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now we're getting to the elite of the elite schedules. Who's next on the list?
Mike, I've got Ole Miss, and this actually kind of surprised me, because on paper, I was kind of thinking this would be one of the more favorable ones. But when you dig into the data a little bit, they do play Kentucky, so that helps. It's the lowest rated quarterback situation. But they also get Nussmeier. They also get Sellers. They get Lagway. And they get Mateer, and throw in Gunnar Stockton. So they play some at the top, and they get some of the breakout candidates here. So I think it's a favorable schedule on paper, but in terms of quarterback difficulty, you know, playing guys that could be closer to the top six in the conference by the end of the year and getting a good chunk of those top four quarterbacks is really difficult for an Ole Miss defense that is in rebuild mode, especially early in the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That is interesting because, again, this is another one on paper that is one of the more favorable in the conference this fall. But thankfully, a lot of these games are at home. But, yeah, Pete Golding's going to have to earn his paycheck just like he did last year. The Ole Miss defense was actually better than the offense. It'd be pretty fascinating to see if that remains the case, because they have recruited phenomenally well, particularly on the defensive side of the football. So, yeah, this is a team that is very, very fascinating to me. And wouldn't it be wild if they made the playoff again, similar to Missouri, a year after everybody projected them to do it?
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy to dream that way if you're Ole Miss. I mean, I know we just got done talking about how difficult the schedule is from a quarterback perspective, but getting these games at home, LSU, South Carolina, and Florida, those are three of your biggest swing games are in Oxford. In your road schedule, let's just say if Ole Miss runs the table in those games and loses to Georgia and Oklahoma, and they're sitting there at 10-2, which isn't crazy, they're in the playoff. Even if you lose one of those games, if you lose to LSU and lose to Georgia but beat Oklahoma on the road, to me, that's a 10-2 team. So I think, right, you know, the schedule is definitely challenging from quarterbacks. But when you also kind of look into the ingredients, you like the Austin Simmons factor, you like Pete Golding rebuilding this defense. So very interested in to see where this team goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested to see where you go next, Steven.
Mike, I've got LSU at three here. You know, I think kind of expecting this team to take a big step forward on defense this year. But when you dig into the data, certainly non-conference play, Cade Klubnik in the season opener, they get DJ Lagway in SEC play in week three, and they don't really play any of the quarterbacks projected at the bottom. I mean, Mateer, Taylen Green, Marcel Reed, Diego Pavia, Sellers, Simmons, and Lagway. Throw in Alabama and Ty Simpson, and I think this is a pretty difficult schedule, even if LSU's defense is better this year.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Them taking a step forward, but also the challenges that await. This is another one where, I mean, the expectation is college football playoff. Really, the expectation is to win the whole thing. And they've got the talent. They allegedly have the coach. I'm not 100% bought in on that. But, of course, you know, we have seen some fantastic coaching from Brian Kelly. We've seen some not so fantastic. So this is another one where I'm kind of out on LSU. And by out, I just mean I don't currently think they're a playoff team. But if I'm out, that probably means they're in.
Mike, can you imagine what the reaction is going to be if LSU loses to Clemson and then loses to Florida in week three and to be sitting there at 1-2, I would think part not crazy to think they could run the table the rest of the way, but that seems difficult to go 9 wins the rest of the way and to see what the reaction would be after the offseason they had and to be pretty disappointed in a 1-2 start. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for the Athlon. Who's going to be the next LSU coach when that happens? I know you don't run with that stuff, but I certainly will. That'll be the title of the emergency podcast when they lose at home to Florida. I'll just let you know now. But, I think that's one of the – that would be fascinating. But you're right. I mean, they got the talent. They got the infrastructure. They got the fan base. They got everything to where – and in this new era, we probably shouldn't be so trigger happy, but you can be 1-2 and probably still win the national championship. But that's when leadership, that's when a lot of those things got to be in place. And we'll find out real quickly how strong the foundation is in Baton Rouge if they get down 1-2.
I can't wait for SEC Mike to just kind of lob out there the Lane Kiffin sweepstakes between Florida and LSU for his services, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be glorious. I'll tell you, Lane Kiffin would crawl to Baton Rouge to be their coach. So he's just waiting for that offer.
Man, that's not a crazy scenario, is it? Like, you could see, I mean, this year's coaching carousel in the SEC could be fascinating if that Florida, Kentucky, some of these don't pan out like the preseason predictions think.
Yep. Well, speaking of Kentucky, I you've not referenced them. I don't believe it. We're in the top two. Where are we at?
Kentucky's next. They are at 2. So they play 3 of the projected top 4 quarterbacks. They get Arch, they get Lagway, and they get Lenora Sellers. And you also look at like Austin Simmons, Jackson Arnold, who could also be higher. Non-conference play, they also play a pretty good quarterback in Toledo, Tucker Gleason in Louisville, which should have good quarterback play as well. So just looking at their schedule, just kind of the big picture, you can't play Kentucky's offense, which is probably going to be the worst in the SEC. So that's a bad break for Kentucky's in this ranking. But they do get a lot of the top quarterbacks and some of those breakout caliber quarterbacks that we mentioned. So for a team that has a lot of defensive questions, this is not the easiest of schedules.
Yeah, and thankfully for them, Nico left, because otherwise this might be number one on the list.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm looking for a silver lining, and I'm just not finding it, other than Mark Stoops seems to be having a heck of a time this offseason. So he's feeling at ease. He's calm and collected, and they got rid of Vince Morrow. So maybe that was the thing that was holding him back. You know what?
I was a little taken aback by the, like, he's calm and collected this offseason. I think I'd be hitting the panic button if I was Kentucky, wouldn't you? Like, see a little bit of urgency?
Yeah, man, he's just sitting back collecting them checks. You know what? They're not going to fire him. They can't afford it. And if my boss couldn't fire me either, that's how I'd be acting.
Is he hitting the golf course too with Shane?
No, all the videos are him at the bar. Apparently, he's probably drinking his own bourbon. He's getting paid on both sides here. So, I mean, masterful job, really, by Mark Stoops, if you ask me.
Hey, anytime you can get those sweet coaching buyout checks, which is my dream job to be a fired coach, you got to do it, right?
Absolutely. All right. So, the number one schedule. Who is he? I can't figure it out.
Mike, it is Texas A&M. Kind of almost poetic, because we've talked all offseason about their schedule or their secondary questions, especially after the end of last season. I think the thing with the schedule is there's really not a weak link here. You know, they don't play Kentucky. They do play Mississippi State and Missouri, two of the offenses that most people will have at the bottom of the conference. But they get Lagway, they get Sellers, they get Arch, they get Nussmeier. That's the top four. No, non-conference play, not necessarily taken into account here, but CJ Carr at Notre Dame is going to be pretty good, I think. And Owen McCown for UTSA, also very solid in the season opener. So I just don't see a ton of easy quarterback matchups on here outside of maybe Utah State and Samford. So just within SEC play, they ended up with the lowest total or the second lowest total in the point system. But I think on the eye test, just getting the top four and no real weak links with some breakout candidates mixed in makes this the hardest quarterback schedule.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, you may hate this take then. Let me know. if you think this is crazy, because this is kind of, I'm trying to identify that number four team in the conference that could make the college football playoff. I mean, there's many that could, but if I had to put a wager down on it, I think I'm leaning A&M to be the fourth team to make the college football playoff out of the SEC. Is that a crazy statement?
No, not at all. I think I am too low on Texas A&M in our top 25 in the magazine. So I will probably be moving them up once we get a little bit closer to the season and we kind of finalize our predictions. I think what worries me about A&M's chances to make the playoff is that road schedule, Notre Dame, LSU, and Texas. Like, this looks like to me a 9-3 team. But if they can pick off one of those games, I think they will definitely be in that 10-2 range. I mean, to go back to last season, I mean, I thought this team, I think, was it last March or so, I said on your podcast, Mike, that they would be in the mix to make the playoff in Mike Elko's first year, and they were. And now the question is, like, how do they actually get there? And it gets back to, like, how good is Marcel Reed, which is one of the things that we've talked about tonight in evaluating these schedules, is like, what do you think of Marcel Reed's growth? And that probably shapes your opinion of how difficult it is to face A&M from an offensive perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it may just be the off season, and this is what I do. We get to July and I convince myself this is the year, but it's never the year. So the fact that I'm in on the Aggies, that's probably a horrible sign for him.
So you're out on LSU, in on Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
I sense you're maybe buying some South Carolina stock after maybe selling it earlier this offseason. Not necessarily Florida, right?
If you buy and sell the same offseason, you can't be wrong. I'm kind of debating A&M, Florida, and Oklahoma. Those are kind of the three that I got my eye on. But I don't know if Florida and Oklahoma can navigate their schedules. I mean, they could conceivably, both those. I think Florida and Oklahoma could be 9-3, and they potentially deserve to go to the college football playoff. But I don't know if we've yet to see that. But even 9-3 could be too much to ask, given those schedules. So that's kind of why I'm giving a slight, ever so slight edge to A&M. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Do you? I guess my question would be, like, with your prediction, do you think they can go on the road and beat an LSU or Texas or Notre Dame and to get to that 10-2 mark?
Notre Dame, yes. LSU, yes. Just because I'm kind of down on them, but no, I mean, those games will not be easy. But my concern is always, you know, we're sitting here and we're like, yeah, LSU, Notre Dame, those are the difficult ones, right? Texas, of course. But in the conference, Arkansas will beat you on the road. Missouri, certainly, with 2 weeks to prepare. Of course, you've got 2 weeks to prepare as well. But, I mean, none of these road games are slam dunks. I mean, they could lose all of them. And that's before we, you know, some difficult home games like South Carolina, Florida, and Auburn. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not overly confident in this by any means, but yeah, you're right. I mean, so many road games is troublesome. I'm not particularly, I'm not too impressed with at Notre Dame. I don't think that's, I don't know. I just have no respect for schools like that. But the other four conference road games, certainly going 2-2 just in those is not a given.
A super nerdy observation here would be like the Joe Moore Award, which is given to the best offensive line in the country, should probably sponsor that Notre Dame Texas A&M game, because it's going to be like two of the better offensive lines in the country. So like all the big uglies getting together in South Bend for that one. One thing about A&M schedule, Mike, you know, that you like the home game against Florida, then you turn around on the road and go to Arkansas at Missouri before South Carolina. That's like got trap game written on it in both of those. So I think that's what gives me a little bit of pause. I like them higher than we had them in a magazine, I think 19th. Like I would probably have them a lot closer to maybe 14, 15. But what gives me pause is the schedule. But that also gives me pause about Florida. It gives me pause about Oklahoma. So it feels like somebody is going to come out of that mix and be the next team that makes the playoff and gives the SEC 5 this year. It's just very difficult to figure out between the quarterback uncertainty and the difficult schedules, which one is going to make that jump?
If you let's do it this way, Stephen, Missouri or South Carolina, which one is it more likely to be maybe that fourth team in the conference to make the playoff?
That's a good debate. I would probably have to take South Carolina just because I like having a proven answer at quarterback right now with Sellers. And it goes back to what you and I also talked about earlier, which is that ability to just take over a game, carry a team to a playoff. They have questions here, here, and here, but they got this superstar quarterback who can carry them to the playoff. So I'd take South Carolina.
Okay. I'll take Missouri just to be different, but, and they get to host the game, but that's the only reason. But yeah, again, I probably just cursed them. So my apologies for that.
You know, Mike, I do think you bring up a good question though about scheduling this year in 9-3. I think 10-2 is where you want to be, but I also think every year is different. And it wouldn't shock me if there's a shortage of 10-2 teams and we go to a 9-3 team, which brings us to the schedules for like a Florida, Oklahoma, or even Texas A&M in that scenario. If A&M loses those three road games and they run the table the rest of the way, that schedule is still better than a lot of teams that could be sitting there at 10-2. So I would probably think it's still going to take 10-2, but I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't shock me if 9-3 gets you in this year or another year.
Yeah, and it could be a lot of how that happens, right? Yeah. So what if none of those are blowouts? What if two of them are in overtime? What if the other ones, because your kicker missed a makeable field goal as time expired? You know what I mean? Like, not to sit here and make excuses, but if I'm selecting team to go to the college football playoff and you got a, just because we're talking about them, let's go A&M that went 9-3, but two losses on the road in overtime. And again, and then you're debating Indiana, which lost two games by 45 points. I know which way I'm going there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think there's this big debate about like strength of schedule metrics in the playoff right now, and they're trying to figure out how to tweak it. And I'm just sitting here going, this should already be baked into the conversation. Like, when you're evaluating a team, you ought to be evaluating like who you've played, when you've played them, what the final score was. I mean, I'm all about like metrics and advanced analytics. It's necessarily a need to have more distinctive schedule. It should just be taken into account. But one point that I think you could add to what you were arguing about A&M is, what if, like, if you're Florida, what if you lose to Texas, Georgia, and LSU, and those were teams 1-4 and 6 in the playoff, and they were all close? Like, sure, you got three losses, but if you have three losses that are close to three of the top eight teams in the country, that should count for something, that you were close to that range and you fell short and you still won all your other games. So yeah, there may be a 10-2 team. Maybe that's Miami. Maybe that's Arizona State, whoever it is. I don't know. 9-3 team that lost close to some of the best and had a good strength of schedule should count for a lot.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this game. So I'm going to throw another one at you, Stephen. Well, more likely to be a playoff team, you think? I'm going to go Florida, because these are the two that I'm kind of in my crosshairs, or Oklahoma. Similar schedules, similar concerns. Which do you think is more likely to make the playoff, Oklahoma or Florida?
I would go Florida. I know Cousin Shane thinks that it's the last stretch of the season was maybe not everything we should believe in, I guess. I totally get that. Like, you can read what you want to into those last couple games. But I think with Lagway settled in, if he is 100% and the defense did turn a corner late in the season, if those two things hold, Florida's got a good offensive line. We know they're going to run the ball. They have an elite quarterback, potentially. I think they can make the playoff. I am worried about DJ Lagway's health, but I would take Florida.
All right, one more. This just came to mind. I don't really know why I'm comparing these two. Auburn or Tennessee?
Ooh. I would still probably stick with Tennessee in this one. I think Auburn's got that serious wild card if things really break for Jackson Arnold and they break well, they might surprise everybody this year. So that might be your fourth team in the SEC that you're looking for. But I think about Tennessee, and it goes back to something you were saying earlier, which is, what if DJ Lagway isn't 100%? What if Alabama does have quarterback questions? Tennessee can win both those games, and the only game that they're probably going to be an underdog in is Georgia. Their road games in SEC play being Kentucky and Mississippi State outside of Alabama and Florida is pretty favorable. So I would take Tennessee in that scenario.
Okay. And then one more. LSU or Ole Miss?
I got to stick with LSU. I picked them to make the playoff. My hand is firmly on the burner, ready to be hurt by this team to miss the playoff. But with Nussmeier and the urgency to improve on defense by hiring Blake Baker last year, what they've done in the portal, it feels like a playoff. Like, they've got the right ingredients. So the schedule's tricky. I expect this defense to be better. Worried about the offensive line, but I think Nussmeier and a better defense overcomes that. So I'm placing my hand on the burner that LSU will make the playoff.
All right. Well, hey, I think that's going to wrap us up. Steven, you got anything else before we jump off this one?
As always, Mike, I would kindly ask the cousins to pick up a copy of the Athlon Sports preseason magazine. It's on newsstands. It's available at athlonsports.com. I believe that one of our covers sold out recently, and it had a Big Ten player on the cover. So a little challenge to the cousins. Are you really going to let those guys in the Big Ten beat you in sales? So, yeah, athlonsports.com, magazine at the very top, and newsstands everywhere nationwide.
All right. Thank you so much, Stephen. We appreciate you, again, being flexible. Cousin Shane will be back on the next episode. We're going to continue our fall camp preview series. Haven't quite figured out which team we're going to do, but, you know, we're halfway through that thing with Media Days right around the corner, so we're trying to pump those out. Please like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. We don't ask for much, but we do ask that you do that. But that's going to do it. For this episode, we appreciate you. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time. Next one. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.